Thank you, D. I'm an alcoholic and my name is Craig. Honored and privileged to be here tonight. Thank you so much. And thank you all for attending. Just curious, Brooke, do we have any questions to start?
Nope, not yet.
Okay. And I encourage folks to ask questions right away. That means we might be doing some stuff in between sessions and kind of curious about what we came across or what we saw or something of that sort. If you go to the big book, and when I service sponsor, as you hear me say all the time, service and recovery are not separate. I use the literature with respect to the traditions the very same way I do with the big book when we go through the steps. We have the back of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, where it talks about unity and it talks about the 12 traditions in the short and the long form. We use Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, the entire book, but also most specifically the second legacy chapter. We use Language of the Heart, and then we use various pamphlets, obviously, as we get into discussions. It's why I'm a big proponent of one-on-one sponsorship. I'm not a proponent of having group sponsorships or going through group, whether it's, and I'm not saying what we're doing here is bad, but I'm talking about this should not replace one-on-one sponsorship, is the point I'm trying to say, whether we're talking about steps, traditions, or concepts, because the magic is I'm talking to fill in the blank. And all of a sudden, they have a CPC question. So then we go to a CPC pamphlet. Or maybe I'm talking to fill in the blank and they have a corrections. And then we go to the corrections workbook and we just find various ways to touch all of the literature, look at all of the different AA guidelines. Or maybe there's another member who went to an Al-Anon convention recently and they're like, that's weird because I saw AA's name there, but I thought we're separate. And then we go right to the AA guidelines on relationships with Al-Anon. And so there's, it helps it stay fluid. One-on-one is just the only way in my experience. But again, not that having group workshops with any of these principles are bad. I'm just saying that should not replace the actual work one-on-one in my experience. It also keeps me on my toes. A lot of people I work with, I've been very fortunate to work with over the years. They keep me on my toes. They come up with ideas. They come up with questions I haven't thought about before. They share experiences that are like, that's interesting. We should maybe consider that and bring that up in the district or whatever. And they're the ones to be thanked. That's sponsorship's an honor. So going to the big book, which is where I'm using the short and the long form. Again, I say it every week. I prefer the long form. It's a lot more explicit. The short form of the Tradition 3 says this: the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. And that is one of the most confusing things when it comes to the topic of the discussion that surrounds singleness of purpose. Well, it says I just need to have a desire to stop drinking. Anybody can have a desire to stop drinking. A gambler that only had one glass of alcohol. A heroin addict who's not alcoholic, who only had three beers in their life. Somebody who hasn't even drank before, I've heard this one, can say to themselves, well, I have a desire to not drink. It says stop drinking. So to me, that means that you would have already drank. But I'm just saying this is the danger of when we tell people to just replace words. Or don't worry, you can come here. Like, I think it's our job and our duty as a group and as individuals to go through those first 43, 44 pages of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and help people understand what AA's definition of the alcoholic is, what AA's definition is of what it means to have this illness. The interpretation, of course, is left to the individual, but we should put the appropriate information in front of them. Now, when we look at the long form of Tradition 3, and it's a beautiful one because it tells us what an AA group is, and it tells us what an alcoholic is. And a lot of us think that we don't have literature that says that, but we do. I'm going to read the long form. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Bam! Right off the rip. I mean, ouch, that is hot. Right off the rip. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Can you get any more direct? And when you look up the definition of alcoholism, it isn't, well, my alcoholism made me do this, or my alcoholism. No, it's very clear. And again, if anybody's new here, or if anybody's listening to the recording down the line, alcohol is the qualifier, drugs are not a disqualifier. I'm not in any way saying people that do drugs or do even more drugs than they've drank don't belong here. That's not what I'm saying. I'm setting up the conversation as we go through the traditions for us to stick to our primary purpose, to us to stick to what we do well, for us to pay attention to what this organization is based on. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Very different than the only requirement for a membership is a desire to stop drinking. It's a nice add-on after you understand the long form, in my experience, but by itself, it could be quite confusing. Second sentence of the long form. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Again, very clear. Tall, short, black, white, gay, straight, West Coast, East Coast, Mongolia, Australia, two teeth, 20 teeth, whatever you want. Big purse, large purse, small purse, has a car, doesn't have a car. All of the defects, none of the defects. So it pretty much covers anyone who identifies as alcoholic is welcome. And we should not refuse anyone who wishes to recover. Here's the definition of an AA group. Well, the next two sentences. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. So we should not. That doesn't mean we can't pass a basket and state the seven tradition or read the yellow card or whatever it might be. I'm sorry, not the yellow card, the green card. But we should not. The membership should not depend on you conforming or what money you have. Also, what that means for the big book dumpers in the group is the membership should not depend on whether or not they do exactly what you think they should do out of the book. And I believe strongly in that. Not because I'm not a big book guy, not because I don't love the big book, not because I don't know the big book like the back of my hand, but because it's useless to try to force someone to do something that is unwilling to do it. I'd rather save it for a later date when someone is interested or when we do a better job becoming more attractive that they want to hear what we have to offer. But the membership itself should not depend upon the money or the conformity. Yes, there's 1,742,000 musts in the big book, but it doesn't matter. The bottom line is there are no musts to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what this tradition clearly states. However, if you want what we have, then you must do the things we've done. But that's a lot more of an interesting discussion and option. That's what the traditions do. They open up the guideposts versus you better, you should, if you don't, blah, blah, blah. We should know that doesn't work. How many therapists, treatment centers, probation officers, professionals, judges, lawyers, doctors, moms, dads tried to do that with us before? Here's the more clear definition of the group, too. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. I don't know what's more clear than Tradition 3, but yet we still have districts and entities and areas and inner groups that are terrified to say no to groups. I have no idea why, because it's my experience that we are not telling groups what to do when we uphold the traditions. We are simply telling groups that this is what we do. And if you don't want to do what we do, then we're not going to list you. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because hopefully what we do is follow these 12 traditions because we consider the common welfare. And we think less of getting money from you, or we think less of whether or not we're going to be liked, or we think less of fill in the blank. And it's just more about being unified with respect to what AA's primary purpose is. So I'm going to read it all in one bunch. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. I mean, I know this is not going to be a popular thing to say in some circles, but if you have an affiliation, based on the way I read this, you can't be an AA group. Now, there's no police that are going to come and write you a ticket. If I'm around, I'm probably going to have a conversation just because I enjoy it. But I don't have any authority, nor does anyone else in the squares here. You know, because sometimes people don't know that they have an affiliation. They don't know that they're going against what AA's shared experience is. You know, most of the time with traditions, yes, there's always some bad apples. We all know that. Some of us have been those bad apples. But in my experience, a lot of the times, it's just either misinformation, ignorance, or great intentions. You know, great intentions. They're just You know, good is the enemy of the best. We've all heard that one before. Comes right out of the book. So what's an example of affiliation? There's many of them. And we'll get into that a little bit probably tonight and more as we go. So if you turn to page 102 in the book, AA Comes of Age, and we end it last week, or I would end this part of the book with the sponsee by saying, do you believe in the group conscience, or are you willing to believe in the group conscience? Very similar to like the second step when we're looking at we agnostics. Am I now willing to believe, et cetera, et cetera. Very similar, same thing. The first question I ask, and when I'm working with a sponsee, we read Tradition 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. I always go to the long form for the reasons that you and I already went over. But then I ask this question. And this is a very deep question if you give it the thought and consideration it deserves. Will I sincerely welcome all? When I break down everything in the third tradition, all of, I don't want to call it jargon because it's good stuff, but all of the words, all of the spirit, all of the shared experience, for me, will I sincerely welcome all? What does that mean? To me, I can go as far and as wide as I want. What if an ex-girlfriend comes into the room? What if a guy who I used to fight in high school comes in the room? What if I'm somebody who didn't grow up understanding that people are allowed to be different and I was racist? Would I still welcome someone who doesn't look like me? And we can keep going on and on and on. Men, women, transgender, political affiliations, not that we should really know those, but in case someone has a t-shirt at their first meeting, whatever the case is, will I sincerely welcome all? And it sounds like an easy thing to answer, especially if you're someone that's been here for a while, sponsored a few people, made a few amends. Of course I am. Of course I am. But if you're really, truly honest with yourself, you have to think of all the subtleties and all the subtle times that you haven't welcomed all. Sure, you haven't told someone to go kick sand. You haven't told someone to go somewhere, right? But have you taken the time to reach your hand out? Have you taken the time to sincerely, that's the key word, to sincerely welcome that new person, welcome that professional? And, you know, it doesn't all fall on our backs as an individual. This is just a question. I mean, the group is really who's responsible. If we have a greeting committee, you know, it doesn't mean you can't go over and shake someone's hand, but ultimately the group has to make sure that we're welcoming all. But we can't ask the group to welcome all if we're not willing to, if I'm not willing to. But it's an important question, because what about the person you have a resentment at from the district meeting? Are you sincerely welcoming them when they come? Or is there kind of just a slight snub, a little passive aggressive? Oh, I didn't see you there, Joan. Nice to see you. Meanwhile, you were watching Joan the whole time she got out of the car. Like, she better not come in here. And you're acting like you didn't see her. So this is a spiritual question for me. I'm not trying to pontificate. But for me, I need to ask myself honestly, much like I need to do every night in my page 86 review, am I sincerely welcoming all? Am I taking the time to make sure people feel welcome? I've been doing... Up until my mom got diagnosed with cancer, I was traveling a lot, like a lot. And I went to so many AA groups that were in the meeting guide and weren't there. And the ones that were in the meeting guide that were there, you couldn't find the place. There was no easy directions. And then when you finally found the place, people weren't really talking to you. That's not at every single one, but I'm just saying I experienced this consistently. And I said to myself, I'm a guy who works with others, is sponsored, understands the principles, relates with God, has the opportunity to do workshops, all that. I just said relates with God. I don't even know, but that makes sense too. I meant to say relies on God, but I still felt like, wow, where's the handshake? For me, I don't want to say the most important, but if you come from a similar experience as me, you could look back at your early days of sobriety and you could probably count two or three people that you've never seen again that saved your life because they took the time to say hi to you, to tell you where the coffee was or what the meetings are doing or even where the bathroom is. Whatever it was, they took the time to sincerely welcome you, to sincerely welcome me. So it's not all about name badges and titles in the service structure and even that of sponsorship. It's a small part of a huge piece necessary for a great whole. Sincerely welcoming all is so important. Even if you look at it, since this is a service-oriented workshop, if you look at it from a public information perspective, yes, even from the AA group, not just a district, but if a professional is visiting your group and they don't get that sincere welcome, they're going to go see 5,000 prospective alcoholics. And do you want them to think in their head like, oh, man, they don't really, they're just sitting there talking about themselves, talking about the Yankees. I thought they were here to help drunks. Sincerely welcome all. First line says in Comes of Age, we worried a lot about membership. In fact, when heavy publicity first came our way, we were scared witless. We said to ourselves, won't all kinds of odd people show up? Yeah, and thank God they do. And thank God they did. And thank God they keep showing up. Next chapter will be how to get the fair cross-section to show up and participate in the service structure. But in the meanwhile, got you, Brooke. In the meanwhile, are we sincerely welcoming all? And you could take that question with you if you happen to jot it down or if I've just somehow burned it into your consciousness a little bit. You could take that question into your service commitments. You could take that question into your district, into your area. I'll never forget the time we had a budget meeting with a bunch of officers, boring concepts and traditions. I don't think it is. I'm just being funny here. Like people are like, concepts and traditions. We 12-stepped a guy right outside the area office and we brought him up to our budget meeting. It was great. And he was very interested. He was like, wow, I had no idea this is what happens in AA. Now, I'm not saying you should go out there with a service manual and start talking to people about the Treasury report and ask them to come to AA, but I'm just saying, if you're going to be ashamed of the very program you work, of the very hours you spent, of the very district you serve, that's going to come off to people. What do we got, Brooke?
Okay, two things. The first thing I just want to say, I'm going to put something in the chat that you referenced last week that Carrie did from 2022 on the differences between the conference charter. That's number one, okay? I'm going to put that in the chat for anyone that wants it. Number two is the question. It says, what would you do if someone joined your home group who isn't an alcoholic, but suffers from another affliction and that person is using the short form of Tradition 3 to say that they belong? Regardless of one-on-one conversation with this person about other fellowships, the traditions, etc., they wish to remain in the group.
This is why I believe so strongly in a group versus individuals. If you have a strong group that makes it clear of what the 12 traditions are, what the primary purpose is, what singleness of purpose is, what it means to be alcoholic, what we do and what we don't do, it's very hard for that to happen. But even when it does, I don't care if they stay around for 3 or 4 months because they're going to learn what AA's way is. That eventually is either going to turn to them admitting that they were dishonest the whole time and they were a drinker, or they don't belong here and they're going to go where they belong and they're going to have a story and you're going to make a new friend. And now next time somebody needs help with an eating disorder or a sex addiction or a gambling, whatever it is, now you've made an ally. When the group is strong, I'm not afraid of any one individual, big ego or not. I could care less about the traditions. None of that worries me when the group is strong. But it's the group being strong that matters. Because when you walk into a room, AA member or not, visitor, professional or not, you get it. If the group is strong and you're hearing the message of the 12 steps, you're hearing the importance of unity, you're hearing the importance of service, longevity, et cetera, but then one guy or gal or person starts kind of going way out of bounds, you just see that for what it is. Okay, so that's so-and-so, and that's what so-and-so thinks. But it's clear to me that the group believes in these 12 steps. It's clear to me that the group believes in having a business meeting. They announce every time I come to this group, they talk about their business meeting. It must be important. So, like, I don't really get too worried about one individual joining. And I say that because while I think it's okay to still have healthy conversations and maybe say to someone, hey, you diagnose yourself, but has anybody taken you through the first 44 pages? Like, you don't want to run up to someone and say, oh, you can't join this group. You're not alcoholic. Like, that's just not what you want to do, even if you know it. And even if you're right, it's just not the approach that we necessarily want to take. We want to take the angle of carrying the message. Because every opportunity to carry the message is an opportunity to carry the message even more. Because if you fast forward from 5 years to anything you've done before, you can easily see regret. Because if you did this instead, this might have happened. So instead of looking at it on a very micro level, this person doesn't belong here, let's tell them to go somewhere else, and thinking about a larger level, you can gain a friend, whether that person belongs to needs to be here or not. And then in turn, that becomes an ally to AA. So that's just my experience and how I handle, because I've dealt with this so many times. And that's just one perspective. I'm sure there's others that have perspective too. But what I'm really trying to communicate is it's really important for the group to be strong, because then this individual stuff doesn't really have that much weight. It really doesn't. We got any more? Excellent. At the bottom of page 102, I have another question that I normally ask myself, or I ask the people I'm service sponsoring. And this goes with the question, will I sincerely welcome all, but a little different angle. Do I directly or subtly keep people out? Do I directly or subtly keep people out? Another question. And again, I'm not a yes or no guy. I don't like these just to be yes or no. But to take time and think about the ways that I do directly and indirectly keep people out. See, a lot of people don't want to say that. Like, all right, well, Craig's got over 25 years and he's doing the workshop and, you know, he's got some experience. He should never be indirectly keeping people out. Well, of course I do. I get resentful at times. I'm human. I would say I definitely welcome way more than I keep out. And I would definitely say my idea of keeping people out is way less than it used to be. But even if it's 0.1%, I want to encourage and empower everyone to look at it so we don't do it. Because trust me, we do it, especially in our home groups, especially where we're well-known and respected, especially where we feel like everyone knows who we are. That's where we probably do it the most. And you want to know the way you find out how easily you keep people out? Go somewhere you're not known and think about how judgmental you are on those people for not welcoming you or keeping you out. And then you'll find exactly how you keep other people out. This is where it gets tough. Some people don't want to do a 10 step, don't want to do an 11 step. The traditions ask you to do that and more. I got a whole lot of cool stories about Tradition 3. Some of you have heard them before. I can give you some tears if you want. I can make some hairs stand up in the back of your neck. But I'd rather be honest and create change and let you know that I need to look at where I'm keeping people out in hopes that maybe you can identify with that and realize, all right, maybe you need to step your game up too. And if you've never kept anyone out, I don't believe you, but God bless you. Since that early time, literally all kinds of people have found their way into Alcoholics Anonymous. Our inclusiveness is now very broad indeed. This was in the 50s they were talking about how broad we are. I would say we're actually not as broad as we could be. It's a very, very simple equation. I'm going to give it to you. Another one that's not popular. I don't care if you're in Mississippi, New York City, North Dakota, South Florida, New Mexico. When you look around the room of the assembly, it looks all the same most of the time. So that tells me we're missing some people. We're missing some people. And if in our backyards we have a large Haitian community, but we've done nothing to reach out to the Haitian community, we're missing people. If we have a hearing impaired or a deaf school down the block from us and we've done nothing to connect with them, we're missing some people. If we've gone to all the correctional facilities, but we forgot about the juvenile detention centers, we're missing some people. And I can keep going on and on. So when that question comes in your head, page 86, what could we do better? There's a whole bunch we could do better. Even for those of you that do it well and know it well. I'll tell you why, because I thought I knew it well and did it well. And there was so much I was missing. And I'll never forget still to this day, because I am a confident individual and I was feeling real good at this workshop in Toronto. And I think I was a speaker. I don't even remember. And this was happening, that was happening. And I remember the service committee talked about reaching out to the alcoholics with Down syndrome. And I was just floored. There's still so many potential alcoholics I've forgotten about. My district has forgotten about. My group has forgotten about. Some of them down the block and around the corner. And some of them right in front of our face. And some of them we didn't even know. I'm not going to go off on a tangent on a conference agenda item, especially all the misinformation that's out there with certain things. But just take the plain language big book for a second. It's a translation to help the individual who can't read what we have written. There's so many people that don't have anyone around them for 400 miles. They can't just sit down and read a book. They can't just ask their sponsor to teach them how to read. They can't. This is an opportunity in a way to help someone get the message. You know what the steps do for you. Imagine if I handed them to you in German. No matter how good they were, well, unless you speak German, but no matter how good they were, you'd have no idea what they said. I could hand you a paper right now in Swahili that says you won $1 million. You'd have no idea. But yet we want to get on our high horses and talk about if we could just help one, if we could just help one. Meanwhile, we're often telling one to hit the road. In fact, we're telling tens and 20 of them to hit the road. We're begging people to come get involved, and then we're saying, shut up, we don't want to listen to you. You've heard this before. Over and over we do that. Over and over and over. And what's behind it all? Our own pride, our own ego, and our own inability to look at, am I sincerely welcoming all? Am I directly or subtly keeping people out? And I'll share one other thing with you. When I'm in the largest settings where I know the most people and I got a bunch of sponsees there and I served with this committee and everybody's, hey, Craig, how you doing? That's when I'm at my worst because I'm so wrapped up in saying hi to everyone. I don't do it often, but I'll forget about the person right there that needs help, which is my task. It's not to shake hands and kiss babies. Questions, Brooke?
Yes, sir. Okay. The first one is, how do you explain it to the person you encourage to go to HA or NA or OA? It happened to me, and the girl, after I told her to get a sponsor in another program because I neglected to ask her initially if she ever drank. Turns out she never did. Since I told her I was letting her go as a sponsee, she never got another home group, never got another sponsor, and still relies on the fellowship and not recovery with the right people. How would you, yeah, and then it says effectively. So it's how would you explain it effectively to the person you encourage to go wherever?
I just feel very grateful that the big book is there to separate me and my desires and my will to anyone I'm working with. So, you know, letting someone know what AA does and what it doesn't do in the beginning of the book, and then asking them to read a story in the back of the book to see if they identify, and then going through those first 44 pages. Any real answer I have for you, I've done it over and over again, but I'm just telling you, takes time. There's no quick answer. If you're asking me a question about what to do in the group, I'm telling you it takes time. It took me 14 years to get my area to finally want to redistrict. 14 years. It takes weeks sometimes to go through a certain chapter if we're going to be effective, even if that person may or may not belong here. That's just my experience. If you want a quick answer, I'm not the guy. I'm quick with it. I'm quick tongue, but my experience doesn't say any of this is quick. The only thing that's quick is when I admit I'm wrong and ask for help, then the solution comes quick. But outside of that, it takes time. So again, slowly spoon feeding the group about what I'm learning, slowly asking the group to consider and discuss this topic, taking the time. If I really feel that concerned about Jane, who's always sharing about an eating disorder and clearly never drinks, am I really taking her out for coffee or matcha tea or whatever and having a conversation and sharing my experience, strength, and hope? The greatest asset we have, you guys love quoting it in the book, but the greatest asset we have is our dark past. And the only thing we have is our experience. But yet somehow we always want to tell someone else's story. All we need to do is identify with how I thought I didn't belong here either. And that's if you're alcoholic or not. All we need to do is identify with the phone was heavy. We balked, whatever it is. All of us in here are no different than each other. Yeah, we have little different experiences and some of us did this. I get that. But it's the identification that creates the unity. That in itself breaks barriers in my experience. Sharing my experience is what allows that individual to really ask themselves honestly, do I belong here? But when I keep telling them they don't belong here, they're not hearing any of the pages we're reading. In fact, they might just be staying to piss you off. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have another one. It says, a group has their AA meetings listed in the meeting guide. They ask to have their weekly music jam session listed in the directory. I told them no, that it wasn't a meeting, but what I could do was put a note on the listing of the meeting before their music thing that said something like music and fellowship after the meeting. Is that okay?
I'm not sure I get the question, but I will answer it as I think I heard it. And this is why I love traditions, because it really takes me out of it and it takes all the things that divide me from others out of it. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic. And I know there's somebody that will be like, well, you could do that through music. And I'm sure you can, but it's not what AA does. It's not. Well, what if we want to sing our meeting to people? What if we want people to share their experience in verse? Fine. If you go that creatively and that far, then fine. But we're not here to have a concert and then call it AA because we passed the basket and read the preamble. We're here to facilitate the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And don't forget, a meeting is just one small thing that a group does. A group does way more than a meeting. It's just one small thing it does. A group does way more in between each meeting. So it's not the primary purpose. But until an inner group or an area or a district or whomever takes the time to have guidelines and has the courage to live up to them and has the courage to say no and keeps allowing loopholes, there's going to keep, you keep walking people through the loophole, it's going to get bigger and bigger. And I share the story 1,000 times. In fact, I was avoiding the story because I've shared this story so many times, but I'll say it because it applies perfectly. I had 3 women who lost their children to heroin. And I had a labor assistance guy call me up and say, hey, these people want to start an A group and this and that. I'm going to give you the short version. And we brought public information out, cooperation professional community, the DCM of that district. I was the chair of a young persons committee at the time. And we facilitated a workshop. And we communicated with them what AA is, what it isn't, what we do and what we don't do. We didn't just say no and hit the road. We took the time. Like I told you, nothing is fat. We took the time to carry the message. We took the time to explain why we're so focused. We are so zoned in on singleness of purpose. And then they understood it and it made sense. And they went and started their own support group. And we started a young persons group, which still exists today. Non-alcoholic trustee in 2004 said the reason for such exaggerated focus is to overcome denial. The reason we have such exaggerated focus is to overcome denial. And I don't care where on the fence you sit, how much drugs or drinking or combination you did, each and every one of us was trying to convince ourselves we weren't an alcoholic. In my experience, drugs are a distraction. It's just another reason for me to not admit I'm alcoholic. It's an outside issue. So is music. No, I'm not going to tell somebody they can't play a guitar at their group. It's not my job. But if I'm a part of the intergroup and we have guidelines and these are the guidelines in order for you to be listed, I am with 100% conviction going to say, sorry, we can't list your group based on the information we have. And I'm not trying to single out because I don't understand that question specifically. I know one group that goes in a clubhouse at the end of the meeting, they play a guitar. It's not part of the meeting anyway, but so I'm not trying to blemish anybody, but I am trying to be very specific that we don't have to be afraid of our principles. It's what's worked. It's why we're here. And maybe it's a little less about being afraid of them and more about not knowing them. Because when you don't have the confidence to stick up to them, you probably don't know them well. And then in turn, you're kind of doubtful. And then, you know, we don't want to say, I don't know. And then before you know it, et cetera, et cetera. Any more questions? So this is a funny story. And I'm going to read it. For example, not too long ago, I sat talking in my office with a member who bears a title of countess. That same night, I went to an AA meeting. It was a winter night, and there was a mild-looking little gent taking the coats. He was not charging anything either. He was just doing it to be obliging. I said, "Who's the little guy?" And somebody answered, "Oh, he's been around for a long time. Everybody likes him. He used to be one of Al Capone's mob." That's how universal AA is today. And that's my experience. I've said this 1,000 times, too. I know professional athletes in AA, people that are in politics, porn stars, actors, musicians, plumbers, teachers. Like, AA is, you know, everybody needs gas and most alcoholics need AA, right? So it's like, you know, but that's not why we're here anyway. It's really cool when you see, I'll be honest, it's really cool when you see somebody different from you come to AA. Because you're like, wow, this is great. Like, it's more than just me or more than just someone who thinks like me, right? Until the business meeting, because then you want them all to agree with you. But it's like, it's important to be as wide as possible. But we can't do that if we don't admit our own defects. If everything's great and everything's fine and I'm good and my sponsees are great and we do everything right, then we can't grow. A good member of Alcoholics Anonymous and a good group, in my opinion, starts with what they need to do better, not with how good they are. I'm just not a fan of the phrase, "I'm from the best home group in AA." I'm sorry. I just don't like it. There used to be so many membership rules about among the groups that if they were all enforced at once, nobody could have joined AA. Let me see what the time is here. All right, so we still have some time. If you look at the history in the 40s of the group in Canada, long list of membership rules. You look about the woman who got kicked out of Alcoholics Anonymous in California right after Pearl Harbor. They literally wrote a letter kicking her out. There were so many rules you couldn't even belong. Now imagine if I told you you couldn't be an Eagles fan. Or I told you, yeah, that's right, Jack. Or I told you that you couldn't be from Florida. Or I told you, you know, you couldn't believe in this politic. Think of how many people would not get the help they need. How many people would not get the help they need? And this is why the foundation in my experience in service and recovery are not separate. There's nothing more graceful. You may not call it graceful, but there's nothing more graceful than a desperate drinker. Because a desperate drinker will take suggestions. Those that are not desperate, they don't need suggestions. They don't want them. They got it figured out. They're remolding, reshaping AA as we speak. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with changing AA, but I'm not talking about those that are going through the process. I'm talking about self-appointed leaders that are redesigning the whole structure. I need to be defeated. I need to be more desperate today than I was when I got here. And that has just as much to do with AA's traditions as it does with AA's steps, in my experience. To many a desperate drunk, AA is the court of his last appeal. How can we slam the door on anybody who stands outside? No, we must never do that. We must always take the risk, no matter who comes in. Maybe our public relations will be damaged because a few strange characters are among us. Of course, our public relations are important, but is it not the real character of the society still more important? Who of us dares to say, no, you can't come in, thereby setting himself up as judge, jury, and perhaps executioner of his brother alcoholic? So the experience through the years, now distilled into tradition 3, says you are an A member if you say so. No matter what you have done or still will do, you are an A member as long as you say so. And a lot of the times that's taken out of context, right? When you read this and you read the experience, it's not as simple because you could argue, right? Well, it says here, you're an A member if you say so. But the implication is that you're alcoholic or you have the desire to stop drinking based on the fact you're alcoholic, not just because you come here and say I'm an A member and we're afraid to say that out loud. I'm not trying to turn people away. I'm trying to empower people to make their own decisions. How can they make their own decision if they don't even know what AA is? Think about that for a second. There's a lot of people sitting in this meeting, let alone AA, that might not even know what AA is, what it does or doesn't do, what its history is, what its principles are. But that's our job. Not to fix anyone and not even to teach them, but to carry the message and share our experience, strength, and hope. I just don't know anything more important than that idea. It's in my big book, in the early chapters, The Common Peril Plus the Common Solution. So I have the common peril with you. I share the idea and the facts that you couldn't stop drinking, that you couldn't stop obsessing over alcohol, that once you ingested alcohol, all bets were off, that you had the hole in the soul like I did, that you were either the best in the room or the worst in the room. Something was broke. That I identify with and I connect with you, but then I connect even stronger to the likes of an unshakable foundation when I identify with you that you appreciate our steps, our traditions, and our concepts. And it's not about being the person in the room that knows the most. It's not about the person who can quote the most pages or sound the best. It's just about sharing your experience. And sometimes that's, hey, I just learned something today about Tradition 3 and I want to share with you. You don't have to be the wizard right away. I mean, you don't have to ever be the wizard. Sure, trying to get to status elder statesman, I don't know who creates these spiritual kindergarten name badges, but trying to be an elder statesman sounds wonderful, but just sharing our experience is enough. Because it talks about the fear, talks about the insecurity, talks about the inability to stop drinking. It talks about asking for help. It talks about how the unity helped me when I couldn't trust anyone. It talks about the common welfare. It talks about the attraction of the district. It talked about giving me something to do after the steps because I thought I was doomed to a life of boredom. It talks about going into the prisons and institutions and trying to carry the message. And I could keep going on and on and on. But those are experiences we can all connect with and share. And there's a constant revolving door of someone coming down the mountain that I'm walking up, or I'm coming down the mountain that you're walking up. And I'm just taking a minute to let you know what's coming up. But if I want to talk about everything other than the mountain, then we start to crumble. The unity starts to go. Doesn't matter who declares themselves as a member. Doesn't matter what makes an AA group anymore. Then there is no common welfare. And how can you possibly have an informed group conscience when you're not sure what AA is, who belongs here, how we've evolved, or what direction we're going in? So it's perfectly understandable of why it's so confusing sometimes. But it's not acceptable. Because we have the literature that has been here for years. We have the money that we've poured into it. We've had the time and effort that trusted servants have put in. Pride and ego. I know Bill's writing. I know some of you have seen, and I can't think of where it is right now for whatever reason. I don't know if it was the Heartbeat of AA or a Grapevine article, but Bill basically talking about if we're going to die, we're going to die from within. And we've all heard that before. And I'm just going to take it to the next level. And I'm not the first person to say this, but I really think it starts with the DCM. The DCM, I like that. That was my favorite service commitment. And the DCM, in my experience, if you do what your job entails, is even busier than the delegate. There's a lot to do. And there's no job more important, connecting the area to the GSRs, to the groups, and back and forth. And if we're a DCM, and if there's any DCMs in here that are just learning these things, I'm not condescending to someone learning. I'm talking altruistically. If we don't know what our job is, if we don't understand what our principles are, then what do we have to teach? Because I'm going to give you a very clear, concise consideration. If I'm hosting a district meeting as a DCM and I have 15 GSRs in the district meeting and they're all asking me a question and I don't use the traditions or concepts to answer them, I failed. Sure, there's going to be someone in this world, someone in this meeting, or someone that hears that recording and says, wow, Craig's radical. That's my experience. If I'm not answering the questions based on these traditions and concepts, I failed. I need to know them. I need to know how to use them. I need to learn them because those are our solutions. The same way, if I call my sponsor up or you call your sponsor up and you have this recurring resentment, which is an oxymoron because that's essentially a resentment, it's recurring. But if you have this resentment that just won't go away, what do? We offer step work. We offer a solution. If for some reason, every time Joan walks in the room, we just keep our head down, what does our sponsor suggest? Maybe there's an amends that needs to be made. Maybe there's something we're doing wrong. Well, it's the same thing with the district. Oh, we can't get participation at the group. And I'm not even going to spoil what traditions those would cover. Figure it out. But the tradition should be answering why we can't get participation, why the group doesn't stay alive, why is everyone so apathetic? Where's all the resentments? Traditions, concepts. If we don't believe in them, getting a little preachy here, but if we don't believe in them, in my experience, the same way we believe in our own individual recovery, the steps, then we're doomed. But that in itself is selfish, right? Because it's not true, but I feel I have more control over my own step work. It's harder to do traditions with everybody. It's harder to do concepts with everybody because everybody's not sitting down and just listening to me. I mean, maybe for this hour they are, but in life, that's not real. People don't just sit down for Craig and say, how would you like us to function? It's not the way it works. They have ideas too. They have thoughts. They have concerns. And sometimes they're different than mine, and that's okay. So how do I pay homage and respect to the A member that thinks differently than me? I listen to them. But I do ask them politely to share their experience, not their opinions. I want to hear their experience. Do we have any questions, Brooke?
No.
Okay. So then I'll just kind of wrap up with this. We only got like 2-3 minutes, but we've talked about the common welfare. So how do I implement that? What things can we leave the workshop with? Well, considering everyone who's affected by the decisions of the group, whether that be your home group or you're also involved in district or intergroup or area, how are we affecting people? Are we considering the common welfare of AA, not just the common welfare of my group, but the common welfare of AA as a whole? What really makes the informed group conscious? If our business meeting format doesn't allow or encourage people to participate, how can we possibly have an informed group conscience? If we're not hearing from people, if we're only hearing from the same 3 or 4 people, even if they're the most informed in the room, how can it truly be an informed group conscience, or can the common welfare be at play? And then in turn, sticking to that singleness of purpose, understanding why a group exists and what we do from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. or from 7 a.m. to 8:30 or from 12:15 to 1:15. What makes us an AA group? Alcoholics gathered together for sobriety with no other affiliation is what makes us an AA group. That's the foundation and the idea of what it means to be an AA group. And what makes an alcoholic in AA is one who believes they suffer from alcoholism. If you tell someone to just come here and listen to a bunch of words and decide whether they're alcoholic or not, they've done what you asked them to do. But if you take the time and bring them through those first 44 pages and ask them if they're alcoholic or not, I guarantee you that person who goes through the book is going to have a different discussion with you than the person who's just being asked to come up with an idea. The problem is us, including the ones that know everything, including the ones that have all the information, including the ones that are doing all the talking. The problem is us. And I go to bed every night knowing I'm the problem. And I ask God for the power to be the solution. And I just keep trying. Thanks for letting me share.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.